Hello and welcome to the Luke Miller Podcast. I'm glad that you're joining me today. On this week's episode, we're finishing off our series, Here Comes Heaven, as we look at the last of the topics of Advent, which is sometimes the most difficult, which is love. I'm excited for it as we jump into John chapter 13, and we'll go a little deeper into understanding what it means to love one another genuinely. I'm excited for today. I hope you are too. Grab your Bibles, turn to John chapter 13, and let's dive in. Today we find ourselves talking about love, and as we finish our series after looking at hope, joy, and peace, we find ourselves on a topic which seems so easy. It's a word that is used in a very cavalier way throughout the world, and sometimes I think we forget the full weight of that word love. When we look at it in a community setting, it is so much more than just simply potluck dinners or a gathering together. It's more than a game night or anything like that. Those things are all part of the process, but they are not the community in and of itself when we look at what does it look like for a community to love one another. And we find ourselves today in John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35, which is a passage that we've heard probably fairly often. A new command I give to you, love one another as I have loved you, so that you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. Now, when I began to take a closer look at this passage, and as we do this, the first question that came to my mind is, why does Jesus call this a new command? After all, I can go all the way back to Leviticus and find God's command to love my neighbor as myself. And certainly Jesus had frequently taught his disciples the need to love others. Much of the Sermon on the Mount was dealt around the idea of loving others, even our enemies. So why is this a new command? In what sense is this a new command? I want us to remember, or maybe just set a bit of the context here. Jesus had just finished washing the feet of the disciples to show them the full extent of his love. And after his humble act of love, he gives his disciples a new standard for the way they are to love others. Jesus tells his disciples to love in a new way, in a way he had demonstrated his love for them. That's why Jesus called this a new command. It was going above and beyond. And loving others the way Jesus loves us, that's the essence of true community. I really believe it. It's what we strive for as a church. It's what we strive for as we deal with Christ followers. And we'll get to the fact of what it means when we look at how the world will perceive this act of love. And loving loving others is not always an easy thing to do. And to make a statement like, I love others like Christ loves me, is a very difficult thing to do. One of the great theologians of the 20th century wrote, "What's love got to do with it? What's love but a secondhand emotion? What's love got to do with it? Who needs a heart when a heart can be broken?" Now, okay, not exactly a great theologian. It was Tina Turner in her song, What's Love Got to Do With It? But I think that sums up so often when we have been hurt in many ways and in by all sorts of different means. We find ourselves having a jaded view of love. I will show love to others like people in the world have shown love to me. And that's where we get a bit of that jaded attitude where it's like, what's love but a secondhand emotion, or who needs a heart when a heart can be broken? And Jesus, I mean, that worldview is not something new, right? Which is why Jesus is giving this new command. It's love others like I have loved you, not like love others like the world has loved you, because here we see, even in Jesus' time, a world where the Romans have not shown a lot of love, the religious leaders, anyone in authority in the ancient Near East at this time has not shown love in a good way. It has been coming in an authoritarian way, saying, if you know, if you pay your taxes, then this, that, or the other, or really love, which is based on fear. So it was kind of a one-way street. Now, Jesus gives this aspect of, it gives several different aspects of love, and I think it can help us have maybe hopefully a fresh perspective on how we can love others in the same way. And we kind of start every statement by saying, I love others like Christ loves me when I, and we'll go through this. And the first one is when I am honest about who I am. Different people wanted Jesus to be different things. We see this as people talk, as Jesus even asks his disciples, who do you think I am? They viewed Jesus differently. People were looking for him to be a political leader who could come and lead them out from under the oppression of the Roman government. Some people came to Jesus merely out of a sense of curiosity about who he was and what he might do. Some people thought he was a lunatic. The religious leaders saw Jesus as a threat to their influence and to their power. But Jesus was never swayed by what people thought of him, and that's what I love in this, or what other people wanted him to be. And even though some of those who were the very closest to Jesus didn't fully understand who he was, Jesus was always honest about who he was and why he had come into the world. And he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by elders, chief priests, teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. He spoke very plainly about this. And at one point, Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, But when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter, saying, get behind me, Satan. He said, you do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men. And this actually kind of draws in a little bit more of that motif that we're looking at here, which is we so often think I will show love based on the love that I have been shown by person A, B, C, or D in my life as I deal with them. That's how I respond. And rather than saying, how should I respond, even if I am getting persecuted or I'm being talked down to, whatever it is, if I'm not being shown a lot of love, I still respond in with the love of Christ. I think we can say that we naturally do this, not just simply show the love of Christ. I don't think we naturally do this. That's actually hard work. It's when someone comes to us and when the way someone says their first sentence or their first statement to us, the first time you meet someone, or even when you walk up to the checkout counter and you ask someone at the store for help, and if you get a snarky response when you ask for help, what are you going to do? You just naturally give a snarky response back. And so often our first impressions of someone are now reflecting how we will deal with them forever because of how they first interacted with us. And Jesus saying, this is this new command. He's saying you have to change the paradigm for how you show love. And it's being honest about who you are is that first thing. Jesus was particularly critical of the religious leaders in the day who were not the same people on the outside as they were on the inside. In Matthew chapter 23, verses 27 and 28, it says, woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. Jesus isn't holding back. You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of dead men's bones and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside, you appeared as righteous, but on the inside, you're full of hypocrisy and wickedness. Now, the religious leaders put on a pretty good show. By all outside appearances, they seem to be righteous, but Jesus knew their hypocrisy. And the word that Jesus uses here, we translate as hypocrite, came from Greek theater, which meant to put on a mask. And that's exactly what a hypocrite is, someone who puts on a mask so that they appear to be someone that they aren't. And I'm convinced that hypocrisy is one of the great barriers of real community, not only in church, but in the greater greater community where we live and in Western society. I'm not talking about the kinds of hypocrisy that we usually think of. And often I think a classic is using social media, right? Or our phones with when we have our camera on. How easy is it to put on a filter to make things look better than what they are? And we're afraid to let people know that we're hurting. We're afraid to let people know that we're struggling with issues. We're afraid to let people really get to know us and what we're like because we're afraid of what they might think of us. As a result, our relationships are sometimes so superficial, we don't experience the kind of intimacy and community that God desires for us to have with one another. And there will always be that fear of what will that other person think of me as they start to know me more. And yet, this is something that Jesus does very openly, and he calls his disciples to do it. In fact, Paul is very good at sharing some of his faults with the congregations that he's writing to. And I always say that the golf course is a great place if you want to get to know someone, because over 4 hours from the time that you tee off, you're going to see every emotion that that person has. From the point of where this is the best game ever, I think I'm going to go pro, to I'm quitting this game and I'm throwing my clubs into the pond and quitting forever. And you'll see the full gambit of emotions in that. But yet, it's kind of a reflection of where we're called to when it says, what is that first step in showing love to others? It's being honest about who you are, faults and blessings that you've got. Now, the second part that I want to just touch on in this, that I love others like Christ loves me, yes, when I am honest about who I am with them, but I also when I love unilaterally, meaning God demonstrates his own love for us while we were still sinners, Christ died for us in Romans chapter 5, verse 8. And there's that picture of God's love for us is unilateral. In other words, God didn't wait until we loved him or until we lived our lives in a way that merited his love. And that is a very good thing because, quite frankly, none of us would ever be possible of doing that and living that perfect life. But here is this picture of God didn't wait for us to show us the right, show us love. He didn't wait for us to hit a certain peak and say, okay, you know what? I love you now. And to be honest, I think most of us have a hard time loving that way, don't we? We love people who are a lot like us, those who love us and treat us with kindness and respect. But how about those people who are different than us or those who have hurt us? What about those people is something that we don't show love, right? We've talked badly. They've talked badly about us behind our backs. They've offended us in some way. It's a whole lot harder to love them, isn't it? But Jesus made it really clear that if we are to love like Jesus, we have to love those people too. If you're to love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that, Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5. And that if you greet only your brothers, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that? So this is Matthew chapter 5, verse 46 and 47. Jesus is saying, listen, the tax collectors love their friends. They hang out with other tax collectors. They greet one another and they love the people they hang out with. The pagans greet one another and love hanging out with each other and doing fun things. So what is the difference? You know, what is something that stands out? It's easy to love those who love us. Jesus says it. Anyone, even the pagans, can do that, though. But he's called us to a higher standard. We're to love the unlovable, too. One of the reasons that it is hard for us to do this is because some misconceptions about what unilateral love is. And it might be where we finish for today. It is that misconception about what unilateral is. You know, and first, it doesn't mean unconditional acceptance. Although Jesus loved the unloved, he never accepted their sinful behavior. I think that's a clear, very important distinction. When he talked to the woman at the well, he pointed out her marital infidelity. When the people were about to stone the woman caught in adultery, he told her to go and sin no more. When Peter tried to keep Jesus from going to the cross, Jesus rebuked him. So it doesn't mean that we have to accept or condone sinful behavior. I know it's cliche and we hear this oft, but we really need to love the sinner without loving the sin. And that is the difficult part. And Jesus recognizes this because secondly, the kind of love we're talking about here is not an emotional feeling. It is an act of the will that chooses to put the best interest of the person and the other person ahead of my own. The kind of self-giving love that Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. In other words, I can choose to love someone even if I don't like them, even if I don't feel like loving them. It is exactly what Jesus did for us, realizing that he put us first. And he may not love some of the things that we have done and the mistakes that we have made, yet he still died for us. And this comes so often with, and I think this is where I'll finish, and I know I've said that already once, so we'll see where that goes from there. But this really comes out of forgiveness. And so often in Advent, and as we come away from Christmas, we tie the theme of love together with forgiveness. Forgiveness is the very essence of Jesus' love for us. He came to this earth to provide a permanent solution to the problem of our sin, so that our sin could be forgiven completely. But a lot of us, like the wicked servant that Jesus describes in Matthew 18, even though we have been relieved of this huge debt through the shed blood of Jesus, we refuse to forgive the debts of others. In fact, Paul reinforces that same point in his letter to the Colossian church. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you, in Colossians chapter 3, verse 13. Paul gives us further description of that aspect of love in his first letter to the Corinthians. Love keeps no record of wrongs. And because we live in a world full of sinful people, even in the church, people are going to disappoint us. They're going to hurt us. They're going to offend us. And we can't usually control that. But we can certainly control how we respond to those situations. We can either sit and get angry and get bitter and feel sorry for ourselves, or we can choose to forgive even when that person doesn't ask us to. One of the reasons that forgiveness has such a positive impact on our community is due, at least in part, to how forgiveness impacts our own personal lives. An increasing number of studies, most of them secular, have discovered the link between forgiveness and our physical health. People who forgive others are much more likely to be healthy and experience less stress. When we choose not to forgive others, we don't hurt them. We're just simply harming ourselves. And so that picture of that servant's heart in that love, that new command that Jesus gives in John chapter 13 is one that says you are going to need to forgive. I love as Peter asks Jesus, how many times do I need to forgive? Right? And he doesn't just say, like, he's looking for a specific number. So clearly something's been going on as he asks Jesus this. He may have a name in the back of his mind of like, how many times am I going to have to forgive this person? And you may be saying that same statement over and over as well, right? Someone who's offended you and done stuff to you, and you're like, how many times do I have to forgive this person, Jesus? And Jesus essentially says an infinite amount of times. I'm not going to give you the number. And because in Jewish culture, it was seven. they had a number. They offend you seven times, you're free to do whatever you want after you forgive them seven times. And so now Jesus says essentially an infinite amount of forgiveness, which is, again, part of that new command. You see how that basic statement of a new command I give to you is actually, it's painting a very beautiful picture of what our interactions with other Christ followers should look like and our interactions with the world should look like. It's a challenge to have that servant's heart and be able to think of others, love others, and forgive others, even when none of that is coming towards us. It is a challenge, but I'm thankful that as a community, we do a lot of these things really well. And we see that this is a point of witness to the world. If we accept and love others, yet at the same time, we work together, we work through problems, we forgive one another, that there's differences in being a Christ follower that separate us from the world. As you said, separate us from the pagans, separate us from the tax collectors. It's showing something more. And so as we leave today, I think as we go heading out of the holidays and into the new year, yes, there's always those talks and New Year's resolutions, but it's saying, how do we love others more in our community, even when they're not showing us love, which is a very true statement in a world that I do believe that Christianity is constantly being persecuted. But how do we show love to others? How do we forgive others? How do we show Christ's love in a world that is not showing it to us? Hopefully this has helped a bit, and I hope that you see that as we've gone through this Christmas story and the main topics of Advent, we've been able to gain a larger picture of what Jesus brought, what God's promise of sending his Messiah brought, and the challenge for us to act on it in tangible ways in which that looks like. So I'm going to finish here. We're going to be jumping into another series talking about coming together, which is a great bouncing off of what we've just finished here. And we're going to be looking at Romans chapter 15 over the next couple weeks and next month. So thank you for joining me. I will see you in the new year. Have a very safe holiday. Have a happy new year. And I will see you in 2022. Take care. I'll talk to you next week. Thank you for joining us on the Luke Miller Podcast, part of Sunrise Digital Ministries at Sunrise Community Church in Fair Oaks, California. If you're wanting to know more about our digital ministries, you can download our app at the Google Play Store or the Apple Store, where you'll find Backshed Bible Study, Sunday Sermons, and the Luke Miller Podcast. If you've got questions about who Jesus is or what it means to be a Christ follower, we would love to connect with you. And you can send us a note at www.sunrise.church/welcome, and we'll get you connected. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.